Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. How the 1% transfers wealth from your pocket to their hedge fund account. The most efficient way is to eliminate the middleman, that is, your pocket. Chaz K. explains in one of his best audio collages. I hope you'll stay tuned. There's a place in my heart for people who are doing outside-the-box things with spoken words and other sounds. For instance, Professor Peter Schickele, the world's leading and only expert on the totally imaginary 18th-century composer P.D.Q. Buck. And then there's Ken Nordine from the 1950s. He recorded odd dramatic monologues with interesting special effects. Nordine christened the genre word jazz. Closer to our own time was the Fire Sign Theater. They also did weird and wonderful things with spoken words and sounds. And in our own time, to this quirky list of quirky people who do quirky things with audio, to this list of fairly obscure artists, we can add a guy even more obscure than the rest, Chaz K., also known as Virtual Renderings. From his spacious underground studio, a time zone or two west of here, armed only with a good mixing board, an internet connection, a heck of a record library, and a lot of creativity, Chaz K. puts out extremely interesting recordings. He almost never speaks himself, but he combines the recorded words of others, snippets from movies, songs, and whatnot, combines all this into intelligent and interesting critiques of our society. He then gives this audio away on the internet for free. I like to play his stuff when I can. If you'd also like to listen on your own, check out the New World Notes webpage. You'll find a link there to an archive of just about all of Chaz K.'s recordings on MP3. They're all free for the taking. Again, that link is on our page, and our page is newworldnotes.blogspot.com. And as they used to say, promise her anything but give her our page. This week and next, we'll hear an audio collage Chaz released in 2009. This was near the start of the Great Recession that is still with us. Not much has changed since then, so the collage is still as timely as ever. He starts with Franklin Roosevelt, then segues to Richard Wolff, then Bruce Coburn, and some people I can't identify, and Tom Waits, and Dire Straits. And if your head isn't spinning at least a little by the end, you're not paying close enough attention. This composition is called Tales of Capitalism, too, Observations on Work. And here is the first half.
For 12 years, our nation was afflicted with hear nothing, see nothing, do nothing government. 9 mad years of mirage and 3 long years of despair. And my friends, powerful influences strive today to restore that kind of government with its doctrine that that government is best, which is most indifferent to mankind. We had to struggle with the old enemies of peace, business and financial monopoly, speculation, reckless banking, class antagonism, sectionalism, war profiteering. They had begun to consider the government of the United States as a mere appendage to their own affairs. And we know now that government by organized money is just as dangerous as government by organized mob.
One of these days, things ain't gonna change. One of these days, things ain't gonna change.
The last 30 years, roughly since 1970-75, has been an unbelievable time in America. And it begins with the leveling out of wages. 150-year history is over. And the American people are beginning slowly to sense that the consumption joy is finished. Let's look at why that happened. In the 1970s, a number of factors came together to make that possible. First, the recovery of the defeated World War II competitors, Europe, Japan, meant that American businesses faced competition. And competition from people who had developed their economies after the war with the idea that the only way to succeed was to beat the Americans, who dominated everything from 1945 to 75. So if you're going to make it, you have to produce what America produces better or cheaper or best of all, both. So Americans' businesses reacted in part by leaving the United States, looking to find cheap places of producing somewhere else. That meant Americans lost their job, and so they began to work for less money. The wages start going down. Second, if American company couldn't find cheap labor abroad, there was the alternative. Bring the cheap labor here, and we explode our immigration to bring desperately poor people here to lower the wages. We have a women's liberation movement that takes thousands, millions of American women who worked in the house, and they worked for a job. You get the picture. A whole lot of factors came together, and I haven't exhausted them all, to make wages go down in the United States. Stagnate or go down. Productivity keeps going up. We know that it goes up because the last 30 years are the implantation of the computer, making it possible for each worker with benefit of computer to do much more than they could have done without one. Productivity rises. Wages are flat. The difference is what the employer gets. The last 30 years have been a fantasy, as you're going to see, of employers' dreams come true. An unbelievable time in which the wages stay flat, but each year that you're paying the worker the same, you get more and more stuff to sell. Employers' profits go wild, and all the people who get their fingers on employers' profits, the professionals who sing the songs they like to hear, the shareholders who get a piece of the action of each company's profits, they're the ones who have a bonanza in the last 30 years.
It won't be long, long. Things ain't gonna change. Sometime in the middle of the night, it gets so long, it's so long, it's so long.
This is going to be a period of great opportunity. But to me, the question isn't whether we increase our political margin. The question is whether or not we're going to ask some fundamental questions about the way our monetary system operates. We're seeing we have a debt-based monetary system, and what that has meant is that all we're doing is creating more debt. The banks are creating money out of thin air. We have to look at the way our money's created. We have to look at the role of the Federal Reserve. That isn't a Democrat or Republican issue. It's an issue that relates to whether we're going to control our own government. The banks took over the government with the bailout. We borrowed money from the banks to give to the banks so they could offload their toxic debts or hoard the money or use the money to buy other banks. Our country's in jeopardy because of this. And the only way out is to take a new look at the way we create money in our society. That we have to not just prime the pump of the economy in the way that Roosevelt did, but we also have to look at the structures in our society that are causing this acceleration of wealth upwards.
The ministers meet, work on the movement of goods. Also work on the movement of capital. Also work on the movement of human beings. If we were so many cattle,
grim travelers in dawn sky.
The only thing more profitable than simply making the money off the worker whose wages are flat while he produces more are all the people who handle this exploding bundle of profits, who package it and repackage it and finance it and lend it and borrow it and invent new mechanisms. That's called the finance industry. Of course they went crazy. Every finance company, every bank, new kinds of banks, all kinds of banks, stumble all over themselves to get a hold of this. This immense pot of profits also made everybody else who could get their hands on it grab it before it disappeared. Executive salaries went nuts in the United States in the last 30 years. I understand for many Americans, they've only discovered this fact in the last 30 days and are outraged by it, but it's 30 years old. It means the population is sleeping. Or maybe it just didn't matter. So long as you were getting your situation, who cares if they got 30, 60, 70, 80, 100, 200 million? What difference does it make? There's so much profit that we can all be at the trough. Capitalism always goes wild. We always have bubbles and booms under these circumstances. We open a new continent for capitalism, it goes crazy. It has a new invention, it goes crazy. The railroads did it, electricity did it, nuclear energy did it. Whenever there's an opportunity like this, for whatever reason, capitalist competition produces a bubble that bursts. If you don't want a bubble that bursts, you got a problem with a system, because it has done it over and over. What did the working class do? It had a problem. What was the problem? No rising wages. For a population committed to measuring each person's success by the amount of consumption they could afford. Measuring your meaningfulness in life, your standing, your prestige. Everything about you is measured in terms of consumption. What car, what neighborhood, what mall, etc. What happens to a population for 150 years that experiences rising consumption when the means they had always had to achieve it, rising wages, stop? Well, they can go through a trauma right then and there. We can't anymore. It's over. Most people don't do that. They found other ways. And two in particular I want to draw to your attention. One, Americans undertook more work. That is, people took a second or a third job. The number of hours per year worked by the average worker has risen about 20% since the 1970s. By comparison, in Germany, France, and Italy, for example, the number of hours worked per year per worker has dropped 20%. That's a stunning difference. American workers began to work to a level of exhaustion.
The newspaper next to me leans over and says matter-of-factly, Sacred Mountain towers above meadows, and above us grim travelers in dawn skies. I see the beauty, it makes me cry inside. It makes me angry, and I don't.
Secondly, they sent more family members out to work. Women, particularly, went out to work. Retirees went back to work, and teenagers learned to love a job sooner than they had before. We got more people working. Did that solve the problem of American workers' rising consumption? No, because it turned out that there were all kinds of costs associated to the fundamental exhaustion of the American worker and his or her family. The woman who goes out to work needs an outfit. In our society, she probably needs another car. The children who come back to work have all kinds of, who go out to work have all kinds of needs that they discover out there in the world of work. And the family begins to fall apart in America. And that causes all kinds of other expenses. Daycare expenses, psychotherapy expenses, attempts to cope. We consume more drugs, legal and illegal, than any other population in the world. We have the highest rate of divorce. These are all signs of a household that is blowing apart. And so the costs neutralize the income. So it couldn't solve the problem of rising consumption. So they had to do the second great thing. The American working class began and went on the greatest binge of borrowing in the history of any working class in any country at any time, period. Stunning.
Money means security.
No money means
terror.
Oh.
This is Angel. This is Angel. We are the Android Sisters. Today's topic is money. Money is important. Everyone needs money. Have you been deprived of money?
Do you suffer from money withdrawal?
Do you need a money fix?
Is your money fix not big enough?
What if you lost your job?
The job you can't stand.
The job a machine could do.
And do it better.
What if you lost that?
Then what?
Uh-oh. No money means terror. Oh. Are you happy? Do you wonder why you are not happy?
Do you live in a constant state of fear?
Have they made you into a money junkie?
Do you hate your job?
Do you have a job to hate?
Are you looking for a job?
Are you looking for a job you will hate?
A job that could be done by robots?
Is this not a stupid way to live your life?
But you need
money.
Money means security. No money means terror.
Oh. Are you happy?
Do you wonder why you're not happy?
Do you live in a constant state of fear?
You know
how easy it is
to control someone
in that state of mind. Do you know
how many hours of the day
you think about money? Do you ever think about
how much you think about
money? Aren't you sick of
thinking about
money? Money. But
money means
security.
No money means
terror.
Oh.
For those who had made the profit, an even greater opportunity than flat wages had given them. The business community began to realize that they had a double whammy here going, a fantastic double opportunity. They could get the profits from flat wages and rising productivity, and then they could turn to the working class traumatized by an inability to have more consumption and make available to them the means for consuming more when you can't earn the money to pay for it. you borrow it. And so the profit earners lent the money to the workers to enable the workers to consume more, not by paying them rising wages the previous 150 years, but by lending to them. Now try to think of yourself as an employer. You are now going to, instead of paying your worker a wage, you're going to lend him or her the money so that they have to pay it back to you with interest. Now there is something to be proud of as an American. You live in a system that makes you distraught about your consumption and then services your trauma by lending you money. They get you twice. They stop paying you wages and they substitute a loan for a wage. And you know, the American working class was a great borrower. The richest working class on earth. The American working class had accumulated collateral. It's the best thing your lender could want. Americans own their own homes. So you could lend to them in a way that no other working class could ever borrow, because they had no collateral. The American working class was the richest working class you could have chose to lend to. This is a real bonanza, a whole new continent of making money. Lend to the worker. So that the financial enterprises, reeling from the profit of rising productivity with flat wages, got even more excited, if it's possible, by the unending vistas of lending money to a working class.
To chase and to Wachovia, Wells Fargo, Sally Mae, to MasterCard and Citibank, and also B of A. American Express and Visa, Morgan Stanley too. In debt we trust, so pay we must, we
everyone's a winner, bargains galore. That's right, you too can be the proud owner. The quality goes in before the name goes on. One-tenth of a dollar, one-tenth of a dollar. We got service after sale. How about perfume? We got perfume. How about an engagement ring? Some for the little lady, some for the little lady, some for the little lady. $3-4. We got a year-end clearance, we got our white sale.
And it solved the problems. For a while, they could pay workers less and less, flat. And instead of that making the usual problem for capitalism, you know, capitalism's contradictions are legendary. Even if a legend is a little rusty for many of you, it's legendary, right? Every capitalist has an incentive to push the wages down. The collectivity of capitalists then complains, because if the wages have been successfully pushed down by each one, then the workers don't have enough to buy the crap. Oh, gee, well, we got to give them more work wages so they can buy the crap. Yeah, but if we give them more wages, the profits go down, and then we don't want to play anymore. This is a problem. This is a problem. But don't worry about it. All of that works out. Capitalism is an engine of efficiency, profitability, prosperity, and economic growth. We all know that. So in this system, we produced magic. Workers who could consume ever more. Profit that was falling out of every house, every category. It really was fantastic for 20 years. The mid-80s to now was fantastic. Every problem seemed solved. Underneath the beauty, workers who were completely exhausted, whose family life was so disastrous that the Republican politicians who pushed all of this could stay in power by positioning themselves as the champions of those families that had fallen apart because of what the Republicans did. But the Republicans were the ones who wanted to bring you back to a little old town and a nice church and happy mommy. They were the ones to protect you against the consequences of what they had done. That's a smart political move. That's right. That's really brilliant. You make the changes that collapse the family and present yourself as the champion of the good old family that's falling apart, and you point at the Democrats as the ones who somehow bear the responsibility. It's a genius of Republican politics. But we have an exhausted working class, can't work anymore, and we now have an anxiety-ridden working class because their debts are unsustainable. Unsustainable. The combination of advertising and all this history made people borrow who couldn't pay it back. That could have been foreseen. It's nothing new. And with you put together the desperation of the American working class, given that history, and the efforts of the finance industry to scrounge out every conceivable borrower, the idea that you would lend money to people who couldn't pay it back, that's not a tough call. But the system was premised that that wouldn't happen. And so when it did, nobody was prepared. The banks who had financed it, the clever new instruments, whether they were derivatives or mortgage-backed securities or collateralized debt obligations or credit default swaps or any of the mechanisms that were invented, they all depended in the end on the ability of these endless loans to be repaid. And, of course, that didn't happen. But it didn't happen because banks were crooked. Were they crooked? Of course they were. They're always crooked. It's only a question of degree. And in this Wild West scenario, they were a bit more crooked than usual. And the banks made their loans. They got credit ratings. Some of you know about this. A AAA rating, you know, Moody's, Standard & Poor's, Fitch's, the three big companies. So the banks went to them and said, we'd like you to do an objective study of this security and then give it a AAA rating, which they all complied. They did. And so they were able to market it to people who thought it was secure when it wasn't. That's not new. These people have all been around the block. That's a typical problem. Nothing. The discovery by the press that there's been corruption in the air is crazy. This was a system built to fail, to reach its end when the combination of exhaustion physically and emotional anxiety from the debt made people unable to continue. And those people are now, by the millions, walking away from those obligations, and the house of cards comes down.
And what a great duo. Economist Richard Wolff, accompanied by Tom Waits. On New World Notes, we have been listening to the first half of Tales of Capitalism 2, Observations on Work. Another nice audio collage by Chaz K. I shortened some of the musical selections a smidgen to make everything fit. Please tune in again next week for part 2. Our webpage is newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest Connecticut, for New World Notes, this is Kenneth Doust. Illegitimate non-carborundum, question authority, power to the people. War is not healthy for children and other living things. Black is beautiful. Anarchists unite. And if there are any more slogans from 1969 that I'm overlooking, I'll trot them out again next week. Y'all come back now, here.